3 minutes after the hour. Hello again. I'm David Corsi from AnchorDesk.com. This is your daily program, Anchor Desk on the Air. Today we'll be doing a special Next Big Thing broadcast in which we'll be talking about, well, the next big thing in user input devices. You know, you just think of old keyboards and mice. Have you thought lately about the tablet PC? Have you thought about voice as a actually usable way to address your computer? What is the future of input devices, the way you talk to your computer? We'll be discussing that with our guests in just a couple of moments. Joining us will be Dr. Daniel Russell. He is at IBM. He is the Senior Manager for User Sciences and Experience Research, User at IBM. John Underkoffer, a PhD at the MIT Media Lab, will be here. Rob Jacob will be here from the Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. David Henry, who is the Senior Vice President of Control Devices at Logitech, will be joining us. And Eric Horvitz, a Senior Researcher and Group Manager of the Adaptive Systems and Interaction Group at Microsoft Research. So we have some real experts today on how you'll be interacting with your computer, and we will get to them in just a couple of moments. Today on the Anchor Desk site, continue to talk about security issues and a little bit about Microsoft. If you get into the business of selling security products, does that relieve you of some responsibility for your products to be secure? Taken another way, why should you have to buy a firewall? Why shouldn't the server that Microsoft sells you just be secure? And then, if it isn't, why should Microsoft get to sell you the security that maybe should have been in their product already? This is interesting when you hear Microsoft talking about getting into the security business. And they will, I got a call yesterday, in fact, from someone who represents Microsoft at the PR firm and says, you know, we're not going to be charging people for program fixes. We're going to be selling security products. And I say, well, if you sell them the products that need, the original products that need some security added to it, I mean, isn't that like charging them for a fix? When you get to decide how much security exists at the different levels? That's at anchordesk.com. We'll probably also talk about it a little bit tomorrow on our analyst roundtable. A reminder, doing a ham radio class October 26th, all day, that's a Saturday, coming up very soon at the College of San Mateo, $25, that is for materials and for your FCC test. If you've ever wanted to get a ham radio license like Desmond and I have, well, maybe that's not a reason. If you'd ever thought about wanting to serve your community or your neighborhood emergency response team or having communications in some kind of emergency, well, you can go over to the Anchor Desk page at cnetradio.com, and from there you can find out what we have going.
Covering tech for people who listen. Since 1995, CNET Radio, the tech station.
10 minutes now after the hour, and from CNET Radio and AnchorDesk.com, this is the Next Big Thing, our continuing investigation of the future of consumer electronics and personal technology. You can find out more about the Next Big Thing program by visiting the website at AnchorDesk.com. Today, our broadcast deals with the next big thing in input devices, how we actually interact with our computers. Joining me now by telephone is Dr. Daniel M. Russell. He is the Senior Manager of User, that is User Sciences and Experience Research at IBM Research. Hello, Dr. Russell. Welcome to the program.
Hi there, David.
How much progress is being made today? It seems like input devices move fairly slowly. I mean, I started using a computer with a keyboard. I then added a mouse. I'm still using a keyboard and a mouse. I'm in some very limited ways using voice with my cell phone and a Sprint network dialing service that I use. But other than that, am I missing something, or is my user input experience been about the same for the past 15 years?
I think you're right there. The state of technology is that, you know, keyboards dominate, mice pointing devices dominate, and you're starting to see, as you mentioned, the sort of introduction of cameras and more generally sensing technology, but you're right, it takes a long time to turn these things over. It's not like you can just, you know, stick a device out there wire it into the operating system, have everything integrate smoothly into your total experience. And so what I think you're going to start seeing, though, is with the advent of things like the USB port or USB 2.0, more importantly, you'll be able to start seeing new devices that come out that actually attach very easily, integrate smoothly into the interaction. And that's what I think is going to happen, is we'll start to see new devices coming up even more rapidly because we sort of standardized on those kinds of input interfaces.
It's also been an issue of processing power, memory, just the general environment of the computer, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. For example, the camera stuff, which I think is going to be really important in the next few years, really relies on being able to throw a lot of processor at it real fast. So, for example, we now have DSPs we can put on the chips almost directly right next to the optics. That will really enable new kinds of technologies, new kinds of interaction modes.
When we talk about a camera interface, we'll start with that because I want to get into some of the specific technologies. What do we mean by camera as an input device?
Well, camera is just, you know what it does, right? It takes pictures and it's video, but the use of it can be really interesting. For example, in my lab, we've been doing some really nice studies with cameras that can do eye tracking. So we've been developing cameras that actually can zoom in tight enough to watch where your iris is pointing on the screen. And by doing a little bit of sort of high school geometry in reverse, we can figure out exactly what you're looking at on the screen.
And so, this is what is available now. For example, Canon uses it in some of their cameras.
Yes, yes. Although we're talking about basically calibration-free on top of the bezel of your laptop. So it's actually watching your face under varying ambient light conditions and so on. What we'd like to be able to do then is, as I'm working on a set of web pages, looking through reference manuals and so on, the machine understands what I'm reading and furthermore can tell whether or not I'm having trouble reading it or understanding what that content is all about.
How would it do that?
Well, it sounds kind of spooky, right? I mean, it's the machine watching and reading my mind, but that's not, in fact, what it's doing. What it's really doing is watching the little tiny eye movements, the saccades that your eye normally makes, and tries to understand what it is you're looking at on the screen. And if you're going over and over and over a paragraph, you're probably having some trouble with it. If your eye is flitting around real fast on the screen, then we can tell you're skimming. If your eye is shut, we can tell you're asleep. That kind of thing. That's a little bit of processing you need to add in order to understand what's going on behind the visual system of the person.
That is very impressive. And it's amazing how it is, you know, people think it must be reading my mind, but it's really behaviorally based.
That's correct. What it's doing is trying to understand what kinds of things you're doing in the display area and then trying to make that leap, that sort of conceptual leap to say, well, gee, what can I do to help you out? So, for example, one of the applications we have is as you read through reference material, we can understand, the machine can understand what it is you're actually looking at and start to pull up related queries of related materials. So we actually can sort of help you out with what it is you're really interested in and not what you said you're interested in, right?
Very impressive. Joining us now from the Media Lab at MIT is Dr. John Underkofer. Dr. Underkofer, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. How are you?
So far, we've been talking about cameras as a potential new user interface, monitoring what the user's doing and then responding appropriately.
Right.
Would you like to add a new technology besides cameras to the list?
Well, there's a large amount of research at the Media Lab, and I would say in particular at the Tangible Media Group within the Media Lab that is trying to address a whole bunch of different input modalities. And one of the things that the TMG folks are most interested in is very physically based means for interaction. So, for example, a project from some time ago called Media Blocks would allow you to essentially store images and sound and text on little wooden blocks, not much different from children's toy blocks. But you could walk around the room with these blocks, for example, and just by touching the block to a printer, you would automatically print out whatever you'd collected in the block, as it were. Say it was a video sequence, you would get a still frame. And so it was a kind of way of connecting together a bunch of different devices that you would normally have access to only, again, through mouse and keyboard and a display as your feedback.
That's very impressive.
One example, yes. So the TMG people are interested in that physically based stuff. We built a system called the Luminous Room in which a projector, an overhead projector and camera combination look down at a surface, say a desk surface, and try to make sense of what's going on there. And in one of the applications that we built, an urban planning simulation, you get to move little buildings around, but the buildings are seen by the camera, and so the projector camera combination sort of closes the loop on reality and projects shadows, for example, back down attached to the buildings. You can do shadow studies, you can do proximity studies, you can do all these things that architects and urban planners need to do, but you do them in the context of the real world, again, rather than on the screen.
I'm just trying to imagine that in actual use, and it's, again, very interesting way of interacting with your computer.
Exactly, and I think one of the things we need to think about is when we're talking about user input is the question of for what purpose. And one of the reasons I think that the mouse and keyboard combination has retained its primacy for so long is that it's a good, reliable, general purpose means for interacting with a screen in particular. But if the domain is not necessarily on the screen, if it's in the room, if it's environmental, if it's acoustic, then you get rapidly into a situation where the mouse and keyboard isn't the best possible solution. And
you were,
start looking for other stuff. Excuse me.
You were involved in the design of some computer UI simulation that appeared in the recent Motion Picture Minority Report. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's right. Well, we came at the problem in a way, even though it was for a fictional movie, a narrative film, as if it were a real research project, and that's part of what was interesting about that process. We had this giant curved transparent screen on which images would appear, many images that needed to be sorted out and compared and manipulated in various ways by the various characters, particularly the Anderton character played by Tom Cruise. Spielberg wanted to know how we were going to interact with that screen. He definitely didn't want something as sort of jejun as mouse and keyboard. He knew that by 2054, when the film is set, we wouldn't have that sort of stuff floating around anymore necessarily for specialized tasks like this. He didn't even want to try voice, because we've seen that in science fiction films for 30 or 40 years. And what we came upon very rapidly was a gestural interface. Very sort of perspicaciously said it should look like Cruise is conducting an orchestra, big gestures, and indeed for manipulating images on this giant screen, pointing and doing something akin to sign language is very appropriate. So again, we came at the design problem as if it were a real research problem, came up with something that could actually be implemented, and maybe someone should.
Do you think it will be?
I think it's not necessarily so far off. An issue with all of these things is reliability. With a keyboard and a mouse, there's almost no way for it to fail, short of it breaking entirely and becoming unavailable. But a lot of these prospective technologies take a long time to get into users' hands because it doesn't really work out if they're only 90% effective. Like if they make mistakes 10%, even 1% of the time, text recognition systems are typically around 99% effective, and that sounds good, but if you think about it, you now have one wrong character out of every 100 characters, and that's not actually very good. So you need reliability. But to come back around, yes, I think that those kinds of systems are going to be seen more and more, and fairly quickly. Again, a camera-based input of the sort that Daniel was talking about is a great way to go about this.
I have to interrupt you at this moment. We're talking to Dr. John Underkoffler of MIT's Media Lab and Dr. Daniel Russell of IBM. We'll continue with the next big thing in user interfaces in just a moment.
Now, back to news and talk that gets tech. CNET Radio, the tech station.
You're listening to the next big thing from CNET Radio and anchordesk.com. 25 minutes now after the hour. I'm David Corsi. Email address, david@anchordesk.com. With me are Drs. John Underkoffler of the MIT Media Lab and Dr. Daniel Russell, who's a senior manager of user sciences and experience research at IBM. Dr. Russell, I know you'll have to be leaving us in a few moments. Your reaction to what we've heard so far? We've talked about cameras. We've talked about, in fact, a whole variety of potential new user interface mechanisms.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I think a lot of stuff that's right on the edge, on the cusp of being becoming real. But I think, you know, one of the real challenges that exists for us is making all this stuff make sense to the person on the receiving end of all this. It's really easy to add all these input devices, and I think one of the things that John was mentioning was that, you know, we're seeing an influx of devices that are placed in the world, you know, walls that react to us. We have sensors that you walk into a room and things happen. And it's really easy to make all that super complicated and very confusing. I walk into a room, magic happens. How do I know what can happen, what I can do, what the affordances are of that sort of computational space? So I think that's sort of the next real challenge in this area.
Is the limit the computer, or is the limit the people in terms of designing these user interfaces? The ability for me to, I mean, am I supposed to have to understand a user interface moving forward, or is it supposed to understand me?
Well, that's the goal for us, I think, is how can we design these things so that you understand some of it, and some of the burden has to be on you, because, for example, we think about driving a car as being the most natural thing on earth. But if you ever had to teach a 14 or 15 or 16-year-old how to drive a car, you know, there's nothing natural about it. It's all learned. It's all acquired. The same kind of thing has to happen with our computer interfaces. The mouse, the keyboard, they're not natural. We've learned them. So I think the question going forward is how can we make these things portrayable, fit into our existing intuitions, and be something that I don't have to take, you know, 4 years of postgraduate study to understand.
You've talked about cameras as a user interface mechanism. Any other techniques, devices, designs you'd like to describe?
Well, other devices, yeah, sure. But let me stay on the camera for a second, because we've talked about cameras as sort of watching the person. There's another flip side of that, which is cameras that look out into the world. We've got a project here called InfoScope, which takes, you can imagine, a camera built into a PDA or a camera that's built into a cell phone. Now, there's a lot in the world that's confusing that I don't understand. Signs in Chinese, for example. What I'd like to be able to do is take that camera, point it at a sign in Chinese, and say, translate that for me. And so we've got prototypes of that working here in the lab. I can go to Chinatown, take a picture, and say, oh, that's that anonymous character set there for me really means lotus leaves or something that I'd like to know about before I actually eat it.
A TV show, I want to say in the 70s, with Hugh O'Brien that I think was called Search, but I could be wrong, in which he wore a camera medallion. And there were people back in Master Control who then, looking at the images and being able to talk to him as he walks around, would tell him things. You know, that sign means, you know, whatever in Swedish. That's, yeah. And it was sort of interesting. But, you know, people are very much afraid of cameras, I've noticed.
Well, it's funny because this is a whole part of the user experience story, which is how do we get people to understand that they already live in a camera-enabled society? There are surveillance cameras in a lot of places. So the question becomes, how do I understand what the computer is making available to me? How can I interact with it? If I wave at that camera, will anything happen, or is it just the dead camera, right?
Well, how do we assure privacy so that the camera that's watching your eye movements in order to give you a user interface isn't also sending back your eye movement, your picture, whatever, back someplace else when you end up in a fairly connected environment and you just presume connectivity, but you don't presume that your camera is going to be transmitting the image?
I think there's an important principle here of reciprocity, which is we have to have input devices that we trust and that tell us what they're doing or that we know what they're doing. So, for example, when I type on my keyboard, I know where those keystrokes are going. But when I have a camera mounted on my laptop bezel, where is that image going? Is it really being handed out? I think one of the policies we have to start to adopt is that these devices signal to us where that information is going.
And we are out of time, Dr. Russell.
Sure.
And you are leaving us at this point. Dr. Daniel Russell, Senior Manager of User Sciences and Experience Research at IBM, thank you very much for joining us. We continue with Dr. Underkoffler, and we'll be adding additional guests, all talking about the next big thing in user interfaces. It sounds science fiction, but it could be coming to a computer near you. Stay with us. Anchor Desk on the Air, CNET Radio, The Tech Station. Twenty-seven minutes now until the hour. I'm David Corsi. You're listening to The Next Big Thing in Consumer Electronics and Personal Technology, a series of broadcasts columns, and eventually voting and product awards at the Consumer Electronics Show this coming January in Las Vegas. If you'd like to know more about the next big thing, visit our website at anchordesk.com. Today, the next big thing in input devices, joining me by telephone, is Dr. John Underkoffler of the MIT Media Lab, who was involved in design of the user interface that Tom Cruise interacted with in the motion picture Minority Report, and of course he does other non-entertainment-oriented projects. Joining us now by telephone for the Department of Computer Science at Tufts University is Robert Jacob. Hello, Dr. Jacob.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome to the program. Anything you've heard so far, I know you've been listening, that you'd like to comment on?
Yes, I'd like to step back a little bit and take a broader view. The problem of input, we can look at as two powerful information processors, the human and the computer, connected to each other over this very narrow bandwidth constrained interface. This is Edward Tufte's description. So our job is to improve that connection, to increase the bandwidth across the connection. In the output direction, we're not doing too badly. We have high-quality computer graphics that are pretty decent. In the input direction, we get very little bandwidth from the user to the computer. So our job is to think of ways to get more information out of the user into the computer with relatively little effort from the user.
How do we enhance that as we move forward?
I think one of the general trends that Dan described earlier is lightweight user interaction. Interfaces that observe the user and try to figure out things from the user's behavior. Eye tracking is one. I've also worked in that area. Cameras, other physiological sensors, context systems that detect where you are, what you're doing, whether the phone is ringing. All of these things give the computer extra information about you with very little effort on your part. So we're looking for ways to pull information out of the user into the computer.
Over what period of time are we thinking about these devices appearing?
I've worked in eye tracking for 10 years now, and it's been around the corner for the last 10 years.
I was going to say, most user interface things have been around the corner besides mice and keyboards for the past 10 or 15 years.
But let's think back to the mouse. Engelbart invented that in 1968. It was a good 10 years before it even showed up in any research labs, and 10 years after that before it showed up on people's desks. It was this very exotic, high-tech device. Nobody would dream that you'd spend a couple $100 back then for a device that would just let you move up and down, left and right. So it took 20 years, so you shouldn't feel bad if we're still on that kind of time clock.
You're listening to the next big thing in user interfaces. I'm David Corsi. Stay with us. Our program will continue here on CNET Radio, the Tech Station.
A technical knockout for your ears. This is CNET Radio, the Tech Station.
From anchordesk.com and CNET Radio, it's the next big thing. I'm David Corsi, david@anchordesk.com, if you'd like to send me email. On the phone with us, Dr. John Underkoffler, who is with the MIT Media Lab and also a wanted guy in Hollywood designing user interfaces and being a technology consultant for the motion picture industry. Rob Jacob is here from the Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. And joining us now is David Henry, the Senior Vice President of Control Devices at Logitech. Hello, David.
David, how are you today?
Now, you've been listening to the program so far, and you have the simple task at Logitech of commercializing this stuff.
Exactly. You know, I'm fascinated by listening to all these great ideas, and you're right. Logitech is all about turning these great ideas into reality, you know, with great design, easy-to-use products, and most importantly, things that are reliable.
What areas are you most interested in going forward, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, I think it's interesting to say that the mice have been around for 20 years, and so certainly mice are still a very important part of our future and our growth. Probably the biggest one there is just cordless. Cordless trend is still very, very low penetration. Cordless mice and cordless keyboards are a very key area of focus. Another one, which is one that we've just recently announced, is a pen. So an actual digital pen using pen and paper and handwriting, and how you very simply and naturally get that into a PC.
How do you feel about things like some of the more exotic interfaces we've heard described today?
Well, I think I think it's really interesting to say that there are PCs are certainly going to be everywhere in our lives. There's certainly going to be desktop PCs, notebooks, PDAs, phones, cars, et cetera. And depending upon where that computer is in our lives, I think it really will, we need to optimize the right kind of user input. So be that a mouse and a keyboard, which I think is certainly going to be here to stay to some extent in front of the desktop, to voice and touch screens and tablets and certainly, as I mentioned, handwriting. I think video is also an incredibly exciting way to enhance the richness of what can be captured into digital.
Dr. Underkoffler, your reaction to any of this in terms of productizing?
I think that, of course, the productizing is the intersection between what's possible and what's possible to mass produce, what's possible to produce and have work reliably. And, of course, all these sort of far-flung research ideas. I'd like to add one more, which is that I would expect that we'd see some real strides in productizing haptic interfaces. You see bits and pieces already, video game controllers that shake. But more generally, there are companies like Sensible. They make a product called the Phantom, which from the user's point of view is like a pen that's attached to an armature. But it can push back on you, so you can simulate any surface. So as they have programs that you can use to sort of sculpt in 3D. And although you're holding this pen and it's not physically touching anything, any substance that you want to can be simulated so that it appears to be, haptically floating in space. In other words, your sense of touch is engaged. And I think that is a technology that really is just around the corner.
Dr. Jacob.
Eye tracking, for example, looks like it's much, much closer. When I started working on it, it needed a whole bunch of special hardware. Now it just needs a camera, a light source, a frame grabber, and a high-powered CPU. And you have almost all those things except a little light source on normal PCs that you buy just for regular desktops. So we've got most of the hardware ingredients. It seems like we're a lot closer.
But again,
it still sometimes takes a long time.
Let me thank Dr. Underkoffler for joining us. I know you need to be leaving us now, Dr. John Underkoffler in the MIT Media Lab. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. David Henry of Logitech, how concerned are you when we talk about hooking a camera up that watches the user all the time for cursor and content control? What kind of bells does that set off in a guy, again, who has to actually sell this to people?
Well, certainly reliability and cost come into play, and also not to mention the integration of where you would physically put that camera. Would you integrate that on the screen? Would you integrate that on a self-standing device or what? So certainly the productization of it, certainly is something that we would have to tackle and take a look at.
And also concerns about user privacy?
And certainly user privacy, absolutely.
Your company has been involved lately in bringing a pen product to market, and of course we have the tablet PC out there. We haven't spoken about that so far really on the program. What's Logitech's feeling about handwriting as a user interface moving forward?
Well, I think the basic thing to say is that handwriting is probably the most natural thing that we've been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. So it's a natural interface. It's not changing necessarily the behavior of what people do today, and I think that is certainly a way to make it easier for the user to adopt to it. There's no learning involved.
Joining us now by telephone is Eric Horvitz, who is a senior researcher and group manager of the Adaptive Systems and Interaction Group at Microsoft Research. Hello, Eric.
Hi there, David.
Welcome to the program. You, of course, have a kind of a special charter in Microsoft in that people look to you for all kinds of technology. You go out and look at what people are developing, then do some, people aren't real familiar with Microsoft Research, but you do some very long-range projects that eventually are supposed to become productized.
Right. Microsoft Research is actually in a very interesting position in that we are sort of like a Bell Labs in that we do very long-range things, but we also are privileged with having very excited researchers who like going out and seeing products and looking at the near term and seeing what we can do in the near term that might even be in line with some of the longer term vision.
Talk to me about some of Microsoft's ideas for long-term user interface projects.
Well, our team in particular looks at combining deeper reasoning about a user, leveraging some of the sensory information you've heard about in the previous few minutes from the other guests, to come up with a picture about what's going on with the user, what are the user's intentions at any moment, and then coming up with a nice way to meld that with designs for user interfaces that might someday make computers more like companions or collaborators. We don't typically think about a computer as like a buddy you're working with. It's more like a device you're sort of pushing buttons on and playing with a keyboard and moving a cursor around. And so one concept we're looking at very, very carefully we call mixed initiative interaction. And that sounds fancy, but the idea is that if a computer could figure out if, when, and how to come forward, potentially in a fast-paced way, in working with a user on a project, it might seem sort of like you're collaborating, and it might be a very fluid and efficient experience.
Give me an example of how that might work.
So right now I use a system as an example called Lookout, which we designed on our team. Lookout just continues to watch, in a sense, over my shoulder as I'm working with email. And it's reading that email with me, believe it or not, but, you know, of course, doesn't understand the deep semantics of the email. But it looks at the header structure and the body and the text and actual words and phrases and linguistics. And it figures out what's likelihood that I'd want to bring up my calendar right now and do some scheduling operation or just look at my current appointment structure on a particular day. And it reasons about that probability. It also considers the costs and benefits of bothering me. And decides
the cost and benefits of bothering you. Is that how many times you slam down the mouse or keyboard before?
Specifically, two things. I can
a
encode
little accelerometer.
I can encode my preferences about my how much I value its assistance in different settings. and those preferences are basically it comes to know me. It comes to know what I like and what I dislike about its service. But the idea is it comes forward at the right time and engages me with voice. So it's in a different channel than what I'm working on. And it asks me, may I schedule it for you, for example.
Microsoft
and I'll say, sure,
Bob
go ahead
dies.
With my voice. And it actually will read that email and bring up the Outlook appointment form and fill it out, typically very, very nicely.
That's interesting. It could get in the way, but it really is. It's how well do you implement it?
Right. So what's interesting about mixed initiative interaction is, in general, any kind of intelligent. Well, let's put it this way: a computer looking at a person with its limited sensory information, even with eye tracking, even with ambient acoustics and microphones and a camera, is typically uncertain about what's going on in the world. It's looking through a very small keyhole compared to the kinds of views you might have watching a user as a human being with your common sense background knowledge and so on. And so it's often uncertain about the value of performing different kinds of actions that it might have the ability to perform. And so with a mixed initiative system, that uncertainty is considered as part of its confidence in its deliberation about whether to come forward or not. If you do this right, even a poor service that runs, you know, like 20% right, can be put into a framework where the system knows about that uncertainty, knows about the costs and benefits.
Eric Horvitz works at Microsoft Research. You're listening to the next big thing in user interfaces on CNET Radio, the Tech Station.
Technology is your business and ours. CNET Radio, the Tech Station.
5 minutes now until the hour from CNET Radio. You're listening to The Next Big Thing. I'm David Corsi. My guests right now on the telephone are Rob Jacob of the Department of Computer Science at Tufts University, David Henry, Senior Vice President of Control Devices at Logitech, the big mouse and keyboard company whose mouse I am using right now, and Eric Horvitz, Senior Researcher and Group Manager at Microsoft Research. Gentlemen, we have about 5 minutes left in the program, so I'd like to drag all of this into the 3 to 5 year time frame and ask you what you would expect might be different in user input devices during that time frame, or say at the end of 5 years from right now. I'll start with you, David Henry of Logitech.
You know, I think that
you know, 3 to 5 years, say 5 years from today, I think we will still have, certainly from a PC standpoint, we'll still have some form of mice and keyboards. I clearly think they'll all be cordless. They may be different shapes and sizes and colors and so forth, but I think that's certainly going to be very, very evident. I think voice will become a big player, and certainly touch screens. I think the tablet PC and what's happening there, there's certainly going to be a lot of uptake on that 5 years from today, I would imagine.
So more of the same and some changes, but nothing dramatic 5 years from now.
You know, and again, I fall back to the mice has been around for 20 years.
And you have one of the original ones sitting there.
Actually, we do. It's behind glass, but come down and I'll show it to you one day.
Oh, I've held one of the remade ones. In fact, Dr. Engelbart came in and took it from our meeting to go show somebody else one day. Rob Jacob of Tufts University, what's your feeling 3 to 5 years from now?
Well, things move relatively slowly in this field, like we talked about. But one of the forces that's happening is desktop is pretty well optimized. You can type very fast. The screens are pretty good. Mouse is pretty good. But the force that's driving us away from that is people want to do things in their pocket, in their car, on the bus. So we're seeing things that you would have thought were suboptimal, like palm, little tiny keyboards, but they're what you need when you're in a different environment. So the force that's driving us away from our desks is also driving new innovations in input devices. That's in the shorter term. In the longer term, I think we'll see more of this lightweight, sensor-based, camera-based, but probably not 3 to 5 years. That may take a while for people to accept it and use it.
What about voice in 3 to 5 years?
Oh, voice is another one that's been just around the corner for as far back as I can remember. And it'll probably be just around the corner 5 years from now.
Well, it's getting into more limited use today. At least there are some voice things I know I can use.
That's true, yeah. It's hard to predict, but you would have been wrong if you predicted this at any other time in the last 20 years, so I don't want to do it now for voice.
Eric Horvitz of Microsoft Research, 3 to 5 years?
I think people should get ready for actual voice interaction with computing, where we have a layer of dialogue analysis that sort of makes computers like talking to a hard of hearing person versus the way they are now. And that will be much more commonplace, embedding those layers of intelligence about the dialogue process. Also look out for new kinds of services that you don't even think about today, like notification services, cross-device. I believe that 5 years from now, people will be telling their computers and their secretaries in the cloud through computers about their information preferences. We will receive information and alerts, and even having their incoming calls handled by smart agents.
That all sounds most interesting. It's going to take some work, but Microsoft is in a better position to make that happen than just about anyone else.
Well, it's we're pretty passionate about taking some of the successes that humanity has had on the desktop and bringing that into life, and that means desktop and beyond onto devices. You know, we think about the information overload problem and email handling and handling calls, voicemail, stock alerts, and so on, and we want to basically come up with unified experiences, and we believe that the power of computing not only gave us this information overload, it can solve it as well.
Hey, we are out of time. From your lips to God's ears, gee, I need help solving the overload. That is Eric Horvitz of Microsoft Research. Also, thank you to David Henry of Logitech and Rob Jacob of the Department of Computer Science at Tufts University. You've been listening to the next big thing in input devices, a little bit science fiction-y, but some of this stuff is going to happen. It can't just sit out there on the horizon forever. Or can it? Broadcast produced by Greg Francis and Christy Andrade, who gets our guests together. Stay with us on CNET Radio, and I'll see you tomorrow.